All right, guys, welcome to the latest episode of What the Cluck, and I'm super excited today because I have Ro Harris from Harris Homestead here, and we're going to talk about her flock and her chicken business, and you might find out just a little bit about how to start your own chicken business on your own farm to help support your homestead. So welcome, and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So it sounds like you have quite the business going on your homestead, and I would love to hear more about it, and I'm sure everyone else would too.
Well, thank you. We do. We are very proud of what we've been able to build up on this farm in the last 2 years. As of today, we're just over 300 chickens on property, and of that, 140 are laying hens, which we use the eggs from that for under our limited poultry and egg license, we sell those. And then we have just about another 60 roaster chickens growing up for the meat, and we sell the roaster chickens. So we have that going on, as well as the chicks that we hatch here on our property. So besides that, we have all our other animals, but the chickens is definitely our main product out of our farm.
Sounds great. So what breeds do you raise, and what breeds are best for, you know, the roasters versus the layers?
On the meat chickens, we prefer to go with the Cornish rock broilers, mm-hmm. just because they grow so quickly and the feed to meat ratio. We've been doing the meat chickens in our family actually for 6 years. We were doing just laying hens, and our daughter was in high school, had to do a business ag project, and she decided to raise meat chickens. She pre-sold them, butchered them herself, and she was the only business that made a profit. So, of course, you give a teenager a profit in a business, and it grew from there.
Wow.
So now, and she is our main processor still, and we will do 50 to 100 birds at a time when we process. So we have found that the Cornish works best for us in that type of situation.
I can definitely understand that. You know, we have raised meat birds here, and we bought some heritage breeds, and we've also done the Cornish crosses. And the heritage breeds, you know, we bought these guys last October. They're still growing. You know, they maybe have just reached market weight now, whereas, you know, the Cornish crosses, which is what we've always done in the past, they, you know, within 6 to 10 weeks, they're ready. You know, it's just the difference between the heritage breeds and the Cornish crosses is pretty amazing. I can understand for a business that it might be kind of like a make or break.
It really is, because we have tried the others. I've tried Red Rangers. I've done Pioneer. We have Bellfelders going at the moment that I'm trying to interbreed with some other large breeds, trying to get a faster meat bird out of them. And all of them, it's the whole ratio of the feed, how long I have to feed them out is not the big issue. It's how much feed I have to have given them in that time to get them to the weight. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you don't make much on these birds as it is. And we sell ours for $4 a pound. And there's still not much of a profit there. People don't realize how much time we put into these, and you can end up having a storm come through. We had a storm last week, and we lost 32 birds on the property.
I remember reading that on your Facebook page, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, so we have tried the heritage breed. I would love to find a heritage breed that would grow in about a four-month period to be a market weight at a reasonable feed price, but we haven't been able to yet. But we keep working on it. We keep interbreeding here. I have 8 tractors that we move around that's strictly breeding. So I'm always trying to work on something.
Yeah, when we first started our farm, we did the same thing where we started interbreeding and trying just to build a better bird. And I think we've been largely successful. You know, the ones we've gotten, we've been very happy with, but we've also not tried to market them. They're just for us, largely because mm-hmm. we didn't want to deal with having to butcher them for other people and that kind of thing. It just wasn't something that we wanted to do, so.
Understandable. Butchering day around here definitely can be quite the task. As I said, we'll do 50 is our normal number. 25 to 50 is our normal day. And our daughter's gotten good enough between her and myself that we can knock off about 12 an hour is our rate
Wow.
of going through our birds. But
That's
it's
impressive.
still, I mean, we have the wood veneer. It has gotten that, but I mean, we've been doing it for 6 years, and that's what I try to explain to anybody because she has taught people that come out here to the farm to learn from her. And I always explain to them, remember, she's done this 6 years. We've been doing our setup for 6 years. So when people first start and they watch a video from somebody or a YouTube and they get discouraged that first time going out, you have to realize most of the people that have done videos on how to do it have been doing it many years before they did that video.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something that people have to remember. And there's also different ways to butcher. Like I know for a bird that you're selling as like a market, bird, that there's a certain way that it should be done. But for the backyard homesteader, it's less structured, I think. Like I've seen people, butcher chickens different ways, and we obviously have our own way of doing it. But I've also seen pigs butchered in different ways, and the way that you see them do it in videos is very different than the way that they do it in other countries, and there's advantages to both. So, it for at least for the backyard homesteader, it's not as the word I like to use is structured, but it's probably not the best word to use. But you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it's a good example. I mean, when we first started out, it was strictly for homesteading purposes. We started out because, I had left working the career field, and my husband lost his job 4 months later. So we had to figure out a way to still feed the family. So that's how we started homesteading and gardening. And so you're talking two total professional people. Completely the opposite end of the spectrum, all of a sudden raising chickens and then butchering chickens. Nothing I ever expected to be doing. And then to get to this point where we're full business for the last 2 years and doing the chickens, the bird, turkeys we do for Thanksgiving, the goats we raise, and the cows, it's like, and pigs. I never would have said 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, that you'd find me doing this full time. So, but people that want to do homestead and want to feed their own families with the chickens, there's so many options these days for them to be able to do it on, even the scale of having two birds. It makes a difference in what they're feeding their family. I mean, there is no too small a scale to start on.
So it sounds like you were actually a little bit like me, where you just it came almost homesteading became almost a thing that you did out of necessity, sort of a safeguard against any sort of future problems that could come up in terms of employment and stuff like that.
It came out of necessity because we had to eat. We couldn't have, I had done all the couponing and everything, but you can only help yourself so far at that point. And now we've gotten to the point, I still can't grow a plant to save my life. But I can trade the meat that I grow with other people that do grow their plants. So I could still feed my family. I mean, the things that I have to buy at the grocery store is minimal. I'll walk out with two bags for a 3 week period.
I love hearing that because our first year at this farm, I was like, I'm going to grow all this food. I'm going to grow all these plants. We're going to have radishes. We're going to have cabbages. And you know what happened? Nobody wanted to eat it. They all wanted to eat the meat. And so I said, you know what? Why am I like sweating my butt off in the middle of July growing, we still grow tomatoes, but growing, whatever. And nobody's going to really want it. Why not focus on the meat, which is now why we have so many, egg birds and meat birds and that sort of thing. But how did you go about finding your first set of customers for, I mean, you talked a little bit about how your daughter did it as a project, but when you took your business sort of like as a full-fledged business, how did you go about, advertising and bringing in, customers and stuff?
When we originally started with the eggs, it was basically a sign on the side of the road. And we just had a refrigerator set up in our carport. We were total honor system. Come in, drop your money, and take the eggs you want. And we did it at least 3 years like that. We only had one person steal eggs. So we were very lucky in that. As we've grown now to the point where we are licensed and we've taken it to a different level. Now it's word of mouth is our best advertisement. I have paid for advertising that hasn't paid off. We have over 600 followers on our farm page, our Facebook farm page. And if I miss a few days of posting some picture of what's going on, it never fails. I get a message that someone wants to know what's going on, or did I miss a birth? Did I miss a posting? And that word of mouth that we get from the people that follow our page. The other things we do is festivals and events. I cannot do a weekly farmers market because we are still so small without employees to help feed the animals the twice a day if I'm not here. I tend to do only the one day event where I can feed, run, do the event, get home and do the nighttime feeding all by myself, because we are three people that work the farm, but it's one person full time. But word of mouth, that's the best thing. And a lot of people that like our products, the more they talk about it, and they bring me back ideas of what else I should expand to. And listening to the customer is a big thing I've learned. Even when we were just doing eggs, of course, some people still the old wise tale. If it's brown egg, it's better nutrition than the white egg. And so I learned to bring in the different colored eggs and then start teaching people by having the eggs there available for them, but then teaching them that what came through the bird is what's in the egg, and showing them the egg color and showing them the ear color on the chicken and teaching them that way, that I converted them over that way, showing them and not degrading them that they believed in an old wise tale.
That's interesting, because I know that some people who sell their eggs that I know, people who are trying to, you know, be, commercial egg sellers, something that they struggle with is trying to educate the customer on the quality, the quality of the hen's diet equals the quality of the egg and that sort of thing. So, it sounds like your advice to, sort of a person who's trying to sell eggs for the first time, that there is going to be a little bit of a process of educating people, but that eventually, if you're respectful of other people, if you take the time to teach them, that eventually people will come around.
Most of them will. You're always going to have that one bittersweet sweet person, and unfortunately they'll move on. But the customers appreciate the time we spend with them. And I'd say 90% of the time we spend with customers is education. Why do they want to spend $4 a pound for chicken when they can go buy 79 cents a pound at the store? Well, it took me a few years, but I finally wrote an article that's on our Facebook page specifically to that, to show people the visual. Cooking a store-bought chicken that's 79 cents a pound versus ours, and what you can get out of it, and how you have to think of the different meals you can do from your chicken. And I know one of the co-ops I sell to, they do almost monthly teaching how to cook classes. So they've taught their customers how to cook the different greens that they're growing that people aren't familiar with. So by doing this, they've expanded what their customers are willing to accept. So they're able to expand their baskets and increase their profits.
Where can people find that article that you wrote about the meat birds?
It is right on our Facebook farm page, which is Harris Homestead Sumterville, which is Sumterville. And we're located in Florida. There is another Harris Homestead in another state. But it's located right on there. It was written on, I believe it was December 20th of last year. And it's in detailed with all the pictures, so they could see exactly what you're buying when you buy a store-bought with all the saline. And people don't realize how much they're really not buying.
Yeah. And I'll put a link in the show notes to that article so people can look at it. Because I think that one thing that people struggle with a bit is, how do I educate the customer and even the material. So if they had something to look at that they could use as an example of something they could put together for their customers, that might help them out a bit.
Right. And people are willing to take it with them and look at it later or such. When we do the one day events, I always try to have something there for people to look at. Why is our eggs better? Why is free range? What is free range considered by USDA standards? when they buy the ones at the store and it says cage free. I try to educate people on what the difference really is with the cage free and what USDA standards are versus I always have a picture of our farm and our free range, which is 5 acres totally open and all our animals intermingling and running around. And so I think a big part of our job is not only selling to customers, but educating them.
That definitely makes sense. And one thing I noticed with your farm is that you don't just only sell, you know, products from chickens. You also sell the soap and other things to sort of provide a variety of income for your farm.
Correct. It's listening to the customers, what the customers wanted. When they connect with their farmer, which does take time, it's not always an easy process for you to connect with them. But once they've connected with you, they start asking you, well, you know, I saw that you have the goats. What are you doing with the milk? Well, we make goat's milk soap and we sell that. And that has been a tremendous hit. We just started putting it out publicly this year. And we have our online store that's also connected with our Facebook page. We also raise pigs. Well, we found that a lot of people don't have space to be able to raise a pig in their backyard, but they want to be able to see it and know how it was taken care of. So we raise pigs for other people, and then they just have their pig that they bought, and they have it sent to butcher. So we found that doing these different things of just listening to our customers and what their needs are, and every area is different. I mean, even in the state of Florida, I've got farm friends that are in the northern part that their farms are set up completely different because their customers want something completely different.
That's interesting. So it really sounds like the biggest thing, anybody who wants to start a farm-based business, is you really need to know your customer, you really need to listen to what they want, and be willing to be friends with them and work with them and educate them in order to keep your business thriving.
And educate yourself. You never know it all. And as soon as you get the attitude that I know it all and my business plan is not going to change, then you've already failed yourself. I never would have thought I was going to be milking goats. That was not my plan. I wanted chickens only, chicken farm. That's all I was going to do. Well, once I got here and started having customers come for the chickens and they start asking for other things, they changed the plan. And, I mean, it modifies all the time.
That's amazing. I never would have really, you know, we don't do a whole lot of business from the farm itself. We sell meat rooster sometimes, but, we just don't do a lot of business. So I never would have thought about how much a customer base might actually alter your business plans. But it makes sense at the same time. You know, they see that you have, you know, this product, and then they sort of get caught up in the country lifestyle and, oh, do you have this product too? Because they've always wanted that product, if that makes any sense.
It does. And I mean, it truly has changed right to everything we've done, and every animal we have on the farm has changed completely from when we came here 2 years ago to where I thought we'd be today. I never thought I'd have pigs, cows, or goats. But, you know, you sort of have to go with the market plan, too, of what is there out there. There's so many people that are starting to get into the selling the eggs that, unfortunately, the market's flooded. And so you have to find what can you do with your eggs. Well, all of a sudden, can you can? Are you good at canning? Can you boil your eggs and do pickled eggs? You know, you sort of got to think outside the box and try to weave with what everybody else is changing. Try to stay ahead of them.
That definitely makes sense. You know, I was talking to the marketing manager at a big feed company, and they said the market is completely saturated with mealworms. We want to do something different. So they're trying, you know, different insects for chickens as chicken treats. And it's particularly because the mealworm market is, in their opinion, completely saturated. So definitely, I think that's good advice for any, you know, person starting their own business on a farm.
And I think they have to keep learning. You know, don't think you know it all. Keep reading the articles. You know, go get to your local extension office. That's your best free place to learn from, because they know exactly what's happening in your area. They know what businesses are happening, and they know what businesses have failed and why. So why not use years of experience and save yourself the heartache instead of trying to rebuild a bridge that already is known to not work?
That's really good advice, actually. I never would have thought to do that. I mean, obviously, you know, if you have any question about farming in your area, your ag center is your, you know, your first sort of stop. But I never actually thought that they could actually give you business advice at the same time. So that's a great piece of advice for, you know, listeners to take home is, you know, if you're thinking about starting a business, but you're not really sure if it's going to work out or not, talk to somebody who's been there.
And, you know, and speak to the local farmers if you have it, or the feed store. Best education you can get to is the feed store. They speak to every farmer that comes in. So, you know, those are the places to go look at. Don't go ask a banker because the banker only sees the numbers on the paper. They don't see what happens after that loan leaves and whether it failed or not.
Definitely makes sense. Well, as we get to the end of our time here, I like to keep interviews about a half of an hour. Thank you so much for being here. And is there any sort of final advice that you might want to tell people? And also, where can people catch up with you?
Well, people keep up with me on the farm page. I am on there all day, and it rings my phone all day. And I try to message people as quickly as possible in between everything. You know, the best advice I have to anybody is have faith in what you're doing. And just if you feel that it's the right thing, try it. If it fails, oh, well, you try something different. You know, don't give up. And even if you're doing the homesteading, I mean, my daughter's a perfect example. She's homesteading in a camper living in an RV park. So she grows vegetables in containers on her patio. She's doing something. And you ask her what her livestock is, and she tells you it's worms. That's her livestock. But she's doing something, and she's improving her part of the world. So that's what I tell people. You can never say you're too small.
That's great advice. Well, thank you so much for being here. And everybody, we will put links in the show notes to all the different pages that we discussed today so that you can go ahead and check them out on your own time. So thank you, Ro, for being here. And thank you, everybody, for listening.